Looking for more than just pain relief? At Ability Chiropractic, we help your body do what it was designed to do, heal naturally. Our doctors focus on spinal and nervous system alignment to restore balance, energy, and overall wellness. From infants to grandparents, families across Columbus are discovering that true health starts from within, not from a prescription bottle. Experience what natural healing can do for you. Book your appointment today at AbilityChiro.com. That's AbilityChiro.com.
When your company earns unlimited 2% cash back on all purchases with Capital One, that's serious business. So, Steven at SandCloud got a serious business card, the Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One.
We used our 2% cash back to help build our retail presence.
Savvy, Steven.
And we get big purchasing power, so our business can spend more and earn more.
The Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One. What's in your wallet?
Terms and conditions apply. Find out more at CapitalOne.com/SparkCashPlus.
The Batteries Included podcast is brought to you with United Chargers and their Grizzly range. The next generation of Grizzly is here. Meet the Grizzly Ultimate, the most powerful AC level 2 charger for home use. With a maximum current of 80 amps, that's 19.2 kilowatts, your vehicle could be charged up to twice as fast as a standard level 2 and up to 15 times faster than a level 1. And of course, it's Wi-Fi connected, so you can take control of your home charging, view stats, set a charging schedule, take part in demand response programs, and control your charger remotely. And that joins the lineup alongside the original Grizzly Classic, the Grizzly Duo, designed to charge two vehicles at the same time, the Grizzly Mini, a portable charging station, and the Grizzly Smart, a revolutionary smart EV charger. Those chargers can adjust the current from 16 amps up to 40 amps, that's 9.6 kilowatts. Plus, the Grizzly Ranger IP67 rated, built in Canada, and with the highest quality materials, you can order yours right now. Go to unitedchargers.com. That's unitedchargers.com.
Hello and welcome to the Batteries Included podcast. It's July the 19th, 2024, and this is episode number 46. Thank you very much for joining us. On today's show, we'll be talking about the Porsche Macan, getting a more affordable rear-wheel drive and 4S trims. 2025 Hyundai Ioniq 5 refresh changes have been announced. Tesla is suing a company over a CCS to NACS adapter, and of course, much, much more. Joining us today, maybe before a short time, is the suntanned and vacationing Mr. Tom Malogny, senior editor at Inside EVs and host of the YouTube channel State of Charge. We also have the modernistic Mr. Martin Lee from the EV News Daily podcast, which is available on all the best podcast platforms. And of course, Kyle O'Connor joins us from the majestic, practically palatial halls of Unspec Studios, where he produces high voltage videos for a number of YouTube channels. All right, so let's kick the show off with the EV News Daily weekly reporting roundup. Take it away, Martin.
Well, non-Tesla EV sales in the United States set a new record in Q2 of this year, with several brands increasing their EV efforts. Hyundai topped the non-Tesla EV sales for Q2 in the US, surpassing Ford and GM. Electric vehicle registrations in the US now 7.5% last month, even as Tesla's numbers fell. Chevrolet will introduce a more budget-friendly LT trim and an off-road Trail Boss version of their Silverado EV next year. Chinese battery maker and the world's biggest EV battery maker, CATL, suggesting its new long service life battery will last 16 years or 1.24 million miles. The Nissan Ariya Nismo with enhanced performance marks the return of the Nismo brand to Europe. It'll have external styling changes, of course, and lots of, I imagine, red bits of trim, but also a 4 kilowatt hour larger battery than the current top spec Ariya. Lucid Motors announced that the Lucid Air Pure is now the most efficient EV in the United States. Following updates to their 2025 model year lineup, all Lucids get a heat pump, a new effectively computer brain to make everything faster and snappier. But it's the EPA test cycle 5 miles per kilowatt hour from actually a smaller battery than the outgoing equivalent, 84 kilowatt hour, providing well over 400 miles of range. Porsche introduced the rear-wheel all-wheel drive Macan, as you heard Dom mention. We'll talk about that today. It's the most affordable option in the lineup. The first Macan with two driven wheels, of course, more lightweight. The rear driven wheels as well, which you might think is the right thing to do, alongside a new Macan 4S too. GM announced it won't reach 1 million EVs by 2025. Following comments made by the CEO, Mary Barra, there was initially some pushback from the media folk over at GM on how it was reported to do with 1 million production capacity or 1 million EVs produced, but then they backed down and went, no, you're right, we're not going to hit any of those goals. And they fell in line with what the CEO said. They blamed the EV market not developing as fast as had been expected. The Genesis GV60 will debut the high-performance Magma version in 2025. 600 horsepower and the last GV60 on the EGMP architecture, as Genesis confirmed they'll debut their own EV platform for luxury EVs, distinct from their Hyundai and Kia cousins. Fisker is recalling all its US cars again amid bankruptcy, promising to replace defective parts for free. A judge also allowed Fisker to liquidate all of their stock, one of the vehicles effectively, and knock down prices. Tesla returned to offering more range for more money with their Energy Boost upgrade for the now discontinued Model Y rear-wheel drive. You can add up to 50 miles of range for, I think, just $1,600. It sounds like a stellar deal to me, because you always want more range if you can have it. It appears the battery, as they've done before with the Model S back in the day, was just software locked. It was probably a long-range pack, presumably for supply chain reasons with the likes of LG and their battery suppliers, and you can pay a bit extra, as Mr. Musk promised on his social network X many months ago. Jaguar will cease production of the I-Pace this December as they make room for a new lineup of all-electric Jaguars and JLR as a whole, the first all-electric Range Rovers that expected this year. Ferrari's first electric vehicle will come out in a 2025 model year. Sales should start in about a year's time. The vehicle already spied testing and the facility to build them is now complete in Italy. BYD is one of the Chinese companies to be hit by the new tariffs on EVs imported into European member states by the European Union, and it plans to build a factory in Turkey to circumvent those tariffs. I think all the battery makers, big Chinese EV makers, will look to do the same as well. And the Tesla Cybertruck ranked amongst the top five most registered EVs in the US in the month of May. And yes, if you're keeping score, it did indeed beat out the F-150 Lightning as America's favorite electric pickup. And that is what's been going on this week.
Thanks for that, Martin. That was awesome. That was awesome. Cybertruck, look at that. The sales, kind of surprising, you know, depending on what world you live in, like social media wise. Because if, you know, if you live on X.com, of course, it's like, you know, one of the top sellers. But if you're like on Threads, it's like, what? That's like crazy. That's impossible. How could that possibly be? Anyway, this Tom, I know we don't have you for very long, but I was hoping that you could tell us about the new CHAdeMO adapter I saw on Inside EVs that you have an article up saying, titled, "This is the charging adapter Nissan Leaf owners need right now." So just to start, does this make the Leaf a more practical car now? Is this a road tripper?
Well, it's not going to make the car a better road tripper. It will help owners, you know, find places to plug in. You know, and the interesting thing is the title is, you know, as you said, this is the adapter they need now. It's actually the adapter they needed about 6 years ago. I can't believe it took this long. You know, there was a time when the Nissan Leaf was the best-selling electric vehicle in the world, you know, before the Model 3 really came on the scene and took over. There's a ton of Leafs out there. I think Nissan sold almost 700,000 Leafs worldwide. I don't know exactly how many's in North America, but there's still a lot of Leafs out there. The problem with the adapter, well, I mean, there could be a lot of problems with it. The biggest problem I see right now is the price. It's very expensive. There's about three or four of them on the market now. The one that I got was from A to Z Adapters. There's a few more that are from companies I've never heard of in China. And I don't mind testing them out. I probably will. I've had two of the companies already reach out to me and offer to partner to make do a review. So I might do that. But A to Z is always quick to send me their adapters. And they're all over $1,000. Well, the A to Z one's $999, which is crazy expensive. The other two that I saw are well over $1,000. So that's the problem. you know, a lot of Leaf owners today that have like older Leafs, let's say, the car might only be worth $4,000 or $5,000. So now they're going to spend 20% of the car's value so that it's a little bit more convenient on a road trip. I think if they've been going this far along without it, they probably can continue. But I do think that there's going to be some Leaf owners, and even some Kia Soul EV first generation owners that would be interested in it. You know, we still know the Mitsubishi Outlander plug-in hybrid still has CHAdeMO native on it, but there's just no real use case for that. It's a plug-in hybrid. You don't need it. I wouldn't recommend you buy one. But I think some Leaf owners in particular are going to find this useful. I don't think Leafs are generally used as long road tripping cars, but if that's your car and a couple times a year you go on a long drive, I would want to have this in the car. Most of the CHAdeMO locations have just one CHAdeMO plug. And as we know, you know, these DC fast chargers are not reliable. I mean, I can't tell you how many times I've gone to Electrify America site and there'll be, you know, 8 or 9 CCS1 plugs and one CHAdeMO plug way down at the end. And you look at it and it's got the out of service logo on it. So, I think this is coming a little late, but it's welcome. I've been saying for years, and I maintain it, and I even said it in this video. I just did an unboxing video. I didn't do a test video because I literally got this like 6 hours before I was getting on a plane to take my vacation. So I just wanted to say, hey, look, it's here, and I'm going to be testing it soon. I'm actually lining up a Kia Soul EV I have and a Nissan Leaf EV and even somebody offered a Mitsubishi Outlander. So I might even take them up on that just to make sure it works, because A to Z even told me, look, we've done a lot of compatibility tests with this, but we don't know if it's going to work on every EV on every different charger. So what they do is they include with the adapter some dongles, some USB plugs, and they say if you're an owner and you tell us that this doesn't work at some station, please tell us, look, I plugged into this old Blink DC fast charger and it didn't work. Give us the location and everything, and they're gonna work with the companies to have fixes, and then you'll be able to plug it into your computer, and they'll be able to download online like an update flash to fix it. So I remember when I got the first adapter, the Tesla adapter. Remember those big long things that were for CCS, so Tesla could use CCS stations? They did the same thing. They gave me the plugs, and that one I actually had to use it a couple of times because I think Tesla was sending out updates so that their so that the vehicles wouldn't charge using this thing. And I don't have any confirmation of that, but I know every time Tesla had some kind of an update, now it wouldn't work. So I had to go on the website, plug it in, download the new software, and then it would work again. So, but in any event, it's $1,000. They are going to, A to Z does do, coupon codes with people that they partner with. I have one, State of Charge. You get 10% off. 10% doesn't sound like a lot, but when it's $1,000, it is $100. So if you are interested in buying one and you use the State of Charge coupon code, you'll get $100 off. When I'm done with this trip, I'm going to do my first video is going to be a review of that thing. I'm going to be plugging in different vehicles on different chargers and seeing if it works.
Dom, you're muted unless I just can't hear you.
No, I think Dom's
on mute. I thought it was right, me. Dom.
It was me.
How's my feed, by the way, guys?
Incredible. Because
I know the internet's not great. I'm on it. If you guys don't know, I said I'm on vacation. I'm actually on a cruise.
And you're out to sea as well. Whenever I've been on a cruise, like, I always pay for like the premium connectivity package, and it's always garbage. And then people tell me, don't worry, Elon Musk is fixing that with Starlink, and then all the boats and the ships are going to get Starlink. But Tom, that's a rock solid connection. So that is amazing.
That's good. Yeah. I'm surprised because I did a test here, and I'm getting like less than 1 megabyte upload speed. So I'm like, gosh, if this isn't going to work, but it looks like it's working. So we'll roll for a little while.
Absolutely.
Right. So the Leaf is still a pretty relevant car in some locations, at least. So EVKX was mentioning that the 80,365 5 Leaf sold in Norway versus 58,000 Model Y. So it's outselling the top selling EV in the world. And then also like our used market over here, I just pulled this one up real quick just as an example. There's a bunch of them with higher mileage that are for on sale, used Leafs for sale for in the $4,000 range. 5,400, you get a 26,000 mile, throw another grand on top of that with an adapter. And, that's that's a lot of people really need, and it's a lot more affordable than so many other options.
But anyway, having the ability to plug into CCS stations is going to really help you on road trips, because there just aren't as many CHAdeMOS plugs, and like I said, they're kind of orphaned. The networks, it's almost as if they don't care about them. Like if that plug's not working, they don't rush to fix it. Not that they rush to fix anything, but if there's 6 CCS plugs and 1 or 2 don't work, you can still charge your car. Now you might have to sit there and wait for 2 hours till the other cars are done, but you can charge. If that one CHAdeMOS is broken, you're screwed. There's probably not going to be another one within the Leaf's driving range, because they don't have fantastic driving range to begin with. So this, it does make sense. I wish it was, half the price that it is, but evidently there's a reason why they're all priced where they are. The companies aren't gouging people. They're expensive to engineer, and they're not going to be selling them in tremendously high volume. Like, the NACS to CCS1 adapter that that A to Z makes, they probably put in an order for 30,000 of them at the manufacturing place that's making them, and they might have ordered 500 of these. So how many they're going to sell?
Now, have you got to send this back, or can you do a teardown and have a look what's inside? Because obviously, if you've seen Darla's EV channel, a lot of Leaf stuff, a lot of home battery, bi-directional stuff on these, featured one of these. It's because it's got a battery inside it, a USB socket on the side, like you say. It's effectively, you've got to keep it alive, and it's got all sorts of funny things going on inside it to make that happen. Is that an option for you to tear yours down, or have you got to send this back to the guys?
Yeah, I mean, I could ask them. I always have loans, and typically I'll sign an agreement that say I won't resell it, or I can't give it away and resell it. But if I asked them and said, look, I want to make a video of me taking this thing apart, I wouldn't think A to Z would resist.
I'd love to see it.
Yeah, that'd be cool. Yeah, people love watching stuff getting destroyed.
No, I know they do.
That's why we watch Kyle's videos.
One of the reasons why I don't do teardowns, particularly, I open up the chargers and show people how to wire them inside and everything, but I don't do like comprehensive teardowns because, I don't know if I'm necessarily qualified to comment on the different connections being used. I can give my opinion, but I feel like I'd want to bring somebody over to my house, like a local electrical engineer, if I was going to do that, and really show them and really explain how they use it. Oh, there it is. Yep.
This is a little while ago now.
So I wonder if we have any electrical engineers in the audience.
Is that the CCS2 version? I don't know is that the A to Z one though?
No. This is a different one. Something like a Dong something. Chinese company.
There's two of those companies. One was like, you'll make a video of this adapter. And I'm like, okay, send it to me. And they're like, we got to buy it. And I'm like, I'll give you $1,300 to make a half an hour video and give you free advertising. That's not how it works. You'll pay me if you want to do that. And I'll say this is a promotional thing. But anyway, so, A to Z sent it to me on a long-term loan. And I'll when I'm done with it, maybe I will do a teardown.
So not to move on from that, but to move on from that. I believe you have a video going up a little bit later today, actually, Tom, even though you're on vacation, talking about Ford and their managers being forced to get EVs. I think we talked about that a little bit last week briefly. I think we saw like a headline somewhere. So I'm not sure. So what's up with that? Is Ford forcing managers to drive EVs?
So I have a video going up at noon today, Eastern, And that's another one I whipped up really quickly before I went away, because I just saw the headlines really quickly. I was already like in vacation mode, so I wasn't reporting or anything. But I'm like, I read these headlines that says Ford's, their EV sales are so poor, they're making their managers lease EVs now. So I was like, that doesn't sound right. See, that Ford is so desperate to push its EVs, they're making their managers lease them, right? So I reached out to Ford and said, hey, what's going on with this? I don't have a lot of time. I'm like leaving tomorrow for vacation, but I'm interested in covering this. So basically the way it works is Ford, all of its managers get built into their contracts. This is not just Ford, all automobile manufacturers. Well, at least all the legacy brands. I don't know, the Rivians, the Lucids, the Teslas, they work differently than all the old, like say, legacy brands. But all those companies, if you're a manager, one of your perks is you get to lease vehicles from the company at a discounted rate. And depending on what type of manager you are, if most managers get at least two leases at discounted rates. They can pick from any vehicle they want. A lot of managers get three, depending on how high you are. I mean, think about it. The companies, their managers have to be driving their cars. You know, they can't be a high-level manager driving a Chevy. So they give them big discounts. It's part of your managerial package. And in that, you can choose from any car you want. There's no limit. You can choose any car. It's in your contract. So Ford can't change that. They can't say, okay, all of a sudden now you have to lease a specific car. But occasionally, once a year or twice a year, Ford told me that they do these leases called supplemental lease programs. It's above and beyond what your contract stipulates. If you're a manager at Ford, they'll throw out a supplemental lease, which will be an extra vehicle. So let's say you have two vehicles in your contract that you're allowed to lease. You have those vehicles. But now maybe you want to get a third vehicle and you don't have three vehicles in your contract. Here comes the supplemental lease program, and Ford always has a limited number of vehicles in that. Basically, it's the vehicles that, for whatever reason, they want to move. And so they have a new supplemental lease program that they just put out for managers, but it only includes the Mach-E and the Ford F-150 Lightning. And basically, the reasoning behind that, and I talked to Ford about this, was that they said, look, we need to get as many people in our company exposed to electric vehicles as possible. You could talk about them. You could say, oh, yeah, the F-150 Lightning works. You know, if you need a pickup truck, this truck will work for you. But there's nothing like living with it for a couple of years to really then understand, oh, you know what, this thing can work. And same thing with the Mustang Mach-E. There's still a lot of people out there that don't believe electric cars are really viable for them. And, you know, and there's some people for some use cases where they're not viable. I agree with that 100%. But I think for most people, particularly people that this is their second or third car in the family, an electric vehicle will work perfectly for them. So this is what this program was all about. It's Ford's supplemental lease program. They're not forcing, they're not making their managers, they're not desperate to push their EVs. What they are desperate to do is get everyone in the company, get everyone's butt in an EV so they can experience what it's like, so they can then talk to their friends about the experience. So that's really what this program was all about. And I just thought it was interesting that all these headlines came out and made it look like, you know, Ford's just giving these things away because no one wants them. And nothing could be further from the truth. Ford now is making very attractive lease deals on the Mach-E and Lightning. The dealerships are discounting them. You can get great deals on them right now, and they're actually very well. Their quarterly numbers have been very good.
Yeah, not too bad. Well, thanks for that. So nobody's forcing any EV mandate at Ford then, really.
No, it's if you want an additional vehicle above and beyond what your contract says, here's a good lease deal on and these are the vehicles that you can choose from. And what Ford wanted to make it crystal clear to me is when they do these supplemental lease programs, they always just offer a couple vehicles. They don't say, okay, you can rent any Ford you want. They need to clear out 2024 vehicles because the 2025 is coming in, and they'll say, okay, you can lease one of these just to get it, you know, clear out excess inventory or something like that.
Right. All right. So while we just have you for not too long, much longer, I wanted to throw out another story that we were going to cover. I didn't think we were going to have you for this long, so I just moved this up. So Tesla is suing a Chinese company doing business as Jeco EV, that's J-E-C-O EV, alleging false advertising and federal trademark dilution under the Lanham Act and violations of the California Business and Professions Code. Specifically, the Jeco EV charging adapter packaging and fold-out pamphlet falsely advertised the Jeco EV charging adapter to have a thermal protection in the form of a temporary kill switch such that when the adapter reaches 90 degrees Celsius, charging stops and two IP54 protection level to protect against dirt, dust, oil, and water. These specifications are false, wrote attorneys for Tesla. So that company sells its products on Amazon and eBay. It's expected that the court will issue an injunction against Jeco EV from importing these things into the U.S., which will effectively end the litigation. But I don't know.
If you're, do you remember about 2 weeks ago when I said that there's going to be some news coming out really soon on the these NACS adapters? I kind of gave you guys a little bit of a teaser at the end of our podcast. I knew this was coming. I really couldn't speak about it because the person at Tesla that was telling me about this told me, until it hits the news, please keep it to yourself. This isn't the only company that Tesla is going after. So I think we're going to get more news on this soon. But I will tell you one thing that from what I understand, one of the companies, and this is surprising to me, one of the companies that they are not currently going after is Lectron. And I've talked to Lectron's CEO, Chris Maywald, about this, and he said, please tell your audience, tell your followers, Tom, that Lectron is not included in this as of yet. Tesla has not approached us and with a cease and desist or anything like that, because that's what Tesla was sending out to some companies. And Chris wanted to make it crystal clear that the Lectron is not included in this, which surprised me because we're seeing a lot of the issues with the Tesla NACS connector getting stuck, the adapter getting stuck on superchargers. I mean, there's tons of them. I've had at least 25 of my followers, maybe 30, send me pictures of like saying, Tom, I can't get this thing off the supercharger. And we know that people are just leaving them. They're abandoning them. And Tesla's had to send out Tesla Rangers to remove them from superchargers. So it's surprising to me that they have it. And I reached out to Lectron to ask them about this. And Chris, twice crystal clear said, you can go on record saying we are not included in this. Tesla has not, as of yet, approached us and told us to stop selling it or change it or improve it or do anything like that. So, that's what I've gotten, at least. There are other companies involved with this, different levels of, force is being applied by Tesla. Like, this is the worst one where they actually entered, the litigation to force them to stop selling it. None of the other companies involved, I believe, have gotten to the litigation point yet. I think companies are just complying with Tesla if they're asking them to make a small change or to just remove the name Tesla from their packaging, because they're some of the companies are saying on their website, this is a Tesla adapter. You can't do that. You can say NACS, that's not, Tesla doesn't own that name. That's where we're at. This story's not over. I will at some point have a video out on trying to explain what issues Tesla's had with the individual companies and how they're being resolved, if they're being resolved.
It sounds like they're actively getting these adapters and tearing them down themselves and checking them out, right?
Well, I know for a fact companies like Lectron and A to Z, have sent them, have told, uh-huh. Sold Tesla, look, we're making these things. Here's a bunch of them. Knock yourself out. Tell us if you have any problem with them. I know they've done that with multiple OEMs. You know, I know the those two companies in particular, Tesla, Electron, and A to Z, were almost forcing them on brands and saying, look, you're going to be using Tesla superchargers. Take a look at our adapters. If you have any issue with them, tell me what the tell us what the issues is, and we'll fix them because we want you to list us as a certified, you know, adapter. All both companies want all the OEMs to say you could use the Tesla adapter, or you could buy Electron or an A to Z because we've fully vetted them. Different companies have taken different approaches on whether they're receptive to even testing them out. I've had one company actually. I've had a conference call with one major company over an hour long discussing my thoughts on the adapters and which ones that they should potentially use. So all of the companies right now are trying to decide which one should I do, which one should we approve. And Tesla is obviously checking them all out. And if they find any safety issues, like this was an egregious safety issue. I talk about this when I do my charger reviews. There's some of these chargers coming in from Asia in particular that they'll say they're UL certified, they're NEMA rated and all the stuff. And when I get the thing, I'm like, this is not UL. There's no way this is UL certified. It would never pass UL certification. You know, and then you find out, oh yeah, the cable was UL certified. Not the enclosure, not the connector, not the plug, you know.
Right.
So they play real loosey-goosey when they advertise these things, you know. And so that's why you just can't trust, you know, you really can't trust anybody. You have to check everything out yourself and make sure everything's been safety certified. And with these adapters, none of them have been because there is no formal safety certification process yet. We should have it really soon, but it seems like UL has made some recent changes to UL 2252, so even that is getting delayed a little bit. And I think they made the changes at the request of some of the OEMs.
Okay, so a very dynamic adapter market out there right now.
Well, there's a huge demand for them. That's why. I mean, I think A to Z sold over 10,000 of them already. I don't think Electron has sold that many, but I know A to Z sold a ton of them. And A to Z has a totally new design coming out. If you remember, the one problem that I had with it that I said I didn't like it, and I liked the A to Z adapter, was the bottom switch wasn't automatic. You had to snap it into place to lock it and unlock it. Now, it wouldn't work if you didn't lock it, so it wasn't a safety issue, but it was just an ergonomics thing. I didn't like it. It shouldn't be that way. So they redesigned it now, and the push lock on the top will release both the NAC side and the CCS side. So there's not two locks. The one lock does both. So that's actually, I think it's in pre-sale right now. They're not going to be selling the other one anymore. And A to Z's also told me, I don't know if they have a policy yet, but if you bought one really recently, like in the last month, they'll allow you to exchange it for the new one. There might be a small fee. You might pay shipping or something like that, but it's only the last like month or so. So if you bought one 2 or 3 months ago, you're not getting the new one on an even exchange. It works fine, the old one, but it's just this one, the ergonomics is much better. And I think, I don't have any proof of this, but I think part of the reason why they made this change was from feedback from automakers. Was like, you know, we don't like this switch, you know, get rid of it. It's got to be something with a push button or something like that.
Wow. It's amazing. They're very responsive, I guess, to the OEMs for that. That's interesting.
Well, they're courting the OEMs. They desperately want at least one OEM to say this is a approved adapter. Because if you remember, guys, both EVgo and Electrify America, at least they said if the adapter is not endorsed by an automaker, at least one, you're not allowed to use it on our network. So all these companies are desperately courting the OEMs to say, just say, yeah, this is an approved adapter. So, oops, jeez,
yeah,
I whacked my
Gary
cord.
Clark,
sorry,
Gary
being
Clark
a little
is
too
asking,
animated here,
right? Gary Clark
time
is asking
for another drink, maybe.
Uh-oh. So Gary Clark is asking real quick, when is the review, Tom?
The review on the CHAdeMO adapter or which one?
I don't even know, actually.
Which review? Gary, if you're talking about the CHAdeMO adapter, as soon as I get back from vacation, so, you know, not for another week.
Okay. So adapter demand may be built to skyrocket with GM gaining access pretty soon. Last weekend, there was a couple, I saw a couple posts on the Hummer EV forum. Nebula saw this too. He's actually a moderator over there. Showing like a Hummer owner in Arizona, you know, plugged into a supercharger and getting a charge. I think he was possibly using a different app, like a Ford app or the Tesla app to trigger the charge, to initiate it. But it's been happening a little bit. I think other people haven't had success as well. So I'm not exactly sure what's going on. I don't know if what's his name's in the audience with us today, but maybe not.
They're just doing some pre-testing. Me and Kyle talked about this, I think, a couple of weeks ago. This happened also with Rivian. If you remember, like a week or two before they opened it up, like for a day, Rivian's worked on the superchargers. And, you know, in order to do testing, Tesla's got to open up the network for a short period of time. And, you know, if somebody else just happens to plug in, and we know every day people are out there plugging in and trying, they're going to find that little window of, you know, when this wasn't the first time. The GM vehicles worked like 3 weeks ago, I think, for one day. It was a Saturday. And I got like 10 emails from people. They're like, Tom, get your Bolt and your adapter right now and go plug that thing in and see. But I was, you know, it was a weekend. So I was, I was not in work mode, but then the next day, once I read the emails, it was already turned off. So it's coming soon, but it can't be soon enough because GM folks are really clamoring for that. They've been left out. The Ford and the Rivian owners are kind of you know, they've been you know, in high cotton for a while and looking at everybody else, looking down their nose at everybody else.
Well, I for one look forward to sharing the Tesla superchargers with hordes of Chevy Bolt EVs charging at 50 kilowatts. It should be fun.
Yeah. Well, how about when Leaf owners roll up with their CHAdeMO adapters at a 350 kilowatt station and plug in? Of course. So listen, if you have an EV, you have a right to plug in. But I want to hear. Listen, I'm going to hang around for a little bit longer. I want to hear a little bit about what Kyle's been up to.
Like a rock star on a holiday. Oh my God.
I know.
That was like me in Santorini yesterday. Santorini, jeez. Greece.
He's like a movie star. Look at that.
Such a rock star. Anyway.
So Kyle, you've had a crazy awesome week in Europe, driving more cars, I think, than we can even probably talk about. Porsche Taycan GT on the Nürburgring, Kia EV6 also on the Nürburgring, Cadillac Lyriq, Volvo EX30, Tesla Model 3 Performance, and of course the BYD Seal. So did you also drive the BYD Seal U, the Atto 3 or Dolphin?
Yeah, I drove the Dolphin as well, and I could have driven the other ones, but I just wanted to see what people thought about BYDs. So next trip I can go back and drive the rest of the lineup. So I have a Dolphin video coming as well.
Okay, cool. And I also understand that you had a chat with the Audi CEO, Gernot Dörner?
Yep.
Okay. So I'd like to talk about some of these. We talked about the Porsche Taycan GT last week, but I believe you took it on the Nürburgring after the show. So now you've driven that track before, but how was this experience real quick in the GT?
Yeah, I mean, the car's crazy, as you would expect. Taycan already is a great performance electric car. And this one's dialed up completely to 11. I mean, it's really insane. The thing with the Turbo GT is you go, okay, this makes no sense. It's $250,000. It drives just like the normal Taycan in day-to-day driving. So you go like, what the heck did you spend all this money for? And then it only makes sense when you get it out on track and you're like, oh, okay, this thing is insane. So if you're not going to go to the track or really push the car hard, don't buy this car. It's not for the general Taycan owner. This is for like the crazy electric person who wants an electric weekend track toy, if you will. And this one was fully Vysok backed out. I'll have videos coming on that car. I mean, not sure we need to spend too much time on it.
Yeah, no.
In this show, but it's just, yeah, the car, the faster you drive it, the crazier it gets.
Okay, cool. And it's got that handy snack table on the back of the car too, right?
Absolutely. Yep. Wings make for good dinner tables.
Right. Had a nice, you had a nice tweet out with that, with the picture. I think you were eating pizza, had your pizza box, right, holding, right. So you also had the opportunity to drive the Kia EV6 GT, which is the top performance trim of that car. This was on the Nürburgring as well.
It wasn't a GT. It was just a GT.
Oh, was it a GT? Line.
Nope.
Oh, GT line. Oh, yeah. I looked at the back of like the pictures and I was like squinting and I thought it said GT. I'm sorry.
Yeah,
I need to get my prescription fixed.
Normal all-wheel drive. This was a cool story. I met this Kia EV6 at a charging station, the guy who owned it. And he was a viewer, and we start talking, and we're near the Nürburgring. So, like, he came over whenever he's, I don't know, an enthusiast, but he's never driven around the ring. And I was like, oh, well, let's take the Kia. He's like, here are the keys. And we just did some laps in the Kia and had the best time, just a random guy that I met at the charging station. And it was a great lap. We really had fun of a video as well, just lots of smiles and laughter the whole way around because the car was on like all weather tires, so not even all season. So it was super soft, super slidey. We just had, you know, it's basically like 8 minutes straight of tire squeal. It was awesome.
Wow. Did you destroy his tires?
No, tires look fine.
Okay, that's good. I see this picture we have up. We have you in the car with your passenger on the screen right now, and you're both look to have some big smiles on there.
Yeah, you know, the Kia was so much more fun than the Taycan because the Taycan's very serious. That car is right. Like, okay, it's you can feel the blood coming out of your head when you go around some corners because you really do get insane G-forces. And you have to be totally focused when driving that car. I mean, you're hitting 280 kilometers an hour down the back straight, you know, almost 170 miles an hour, not even on the big, long straight. So the Taycan's really crazy. And then this one is just like you're going slow. The car's sliding. You're having a good time. Zero risk, really, because the speeds are much lower and you're just really enjoying the lap. So this was just a great way to end a couple days at the Nürburgring.
So it held up dynamically pretty decently.
Oh, and Cord's in the chat. So this Cord is the owner. And
we had
so much fun in this one. So shout out to Cord.
Sweet. I've seen Cord around here before, I'm pretty sure.
Great.
Cord
is awesome. It literally just met him at a charger and he's like, here are the keys. Let's go rip.
Right on. That's awesome. It's just live a great life there, Kyle. It's like living the best life, really. You know, just like, run into somebody at a charger. Go to the Nürburgring with your car. Sure. It's cool. So quickly, the Cadillac Lyriq also just happened to be available at your hotel as well for test drives, which is, you know, you live a charmed life, dude. So you took one out, of course, and this is your first time in the dual motor version. Did you enjoy it more than the rear drive?
Yeah. Oh, the Lyriq was so funny. It had so many faults, so many bugs. They had two cars there. One of them you couldn't drive because it wouldn't charge. The other one you could drive, but it had three different error messages on it. So I took that one. And I had known that this would be there because a couple weeks ago, I usually stay at Motor World Munich and I saw Cadillac had a pop-up store, a little demo area. It's very common for automakers to have their service centers at Motor World and sales centers and stuff like that. So there's always cool cars around when you're at Motor World and they have a hotel, car-themed hotel attached to them. And they're in pretty much every major city in Germany. So if any of our viewers are going and you need to find a hotel, just go to the nearest Motor World and see if they have a hotel attached. And that's where you should stay because there's always EV charging and cool cars and it's awesome. So Cadillac had their pop-up store. They had a Lyriq dual motor all-wheel drive. And basically, you know, I booked a test drive a few days in advance. And so I went for my time and got to go drive the car and made a quick video with it, got it up to top speed. And really a much better experience than the rear drive car here. Talking to Nebula, it sounds like they did an upgraded braking package and suspension package for Europe. And my impression is the car is so much better than the original one that I drove. I mean, it drove really nice. It's a weird choice. I'm not sure many people are going to go for them in Europe. Even the Cadillac sales guys were like, we don't know why anyone would buy this car here. It doesn't have lane centering. Super Cruise is not functional in Europe, you know, stuff like that. So they're like, it's expensive and it's mostly for like GM employees who live in Europe. could now have this choice. But, you know, I thought it was really, really nice. And it's an alternative choice. There's a lot of Germans, especially, and other Europeans that like American culture and American cars. And it really does give this big, almost land yacht vibe in comparison to other vehicles that are on sale there. And I really enjoyed it. The sound system was awesome. And I of course, made a video, so that will go up, I don't know when, at some point.
Cool. That's great. But still same opinion about the interior. So it looks nice, doesn't feel great.
Yeah. Oh, no change.
Okay.
But like really rattling. Whenever I put the sound system up, the whole car was rattling. So you get really? That American build quality too.
Awesome. All right. So you also did some high speed driving of the Tesla Model 3 Performance Refresh, and you have a video out titled "New Tesla Model 3 Performance Top Speed and Extreme Thermal Test Stress Test. Yikes, improvements needed." So sounds like the thermals on the Tesla Model 3 Performance could be improved. Was it worse than the pre-refresh? I really don't recall having the Model 3 Performance having like bad thermals.
Yeah, they're way worse than the first generation Model 3 Performance, really? Especially in Europe. And, you know, they get the LG battery there. We get the Panasonic in the U.S. And so the Panasonic battery, we don't know. But the problem is I was overheating not just the battery, which you can see in the red here, but also the motors. And look, at the end of the day, you can overheat pretty much any electric car. I've never driven an electric car. You can't overheat except maybe the Ioniq 5N, but I still think you can overheat that car because at the Pikes Peak race, they were getting them right to the max at the top of the hill. So there's, you can still continue, you know, if Pikes Peak continued, cars would overheat. So there's always going to be thermal limits, at least with current EVs on sale. The problem is Tesla, especially the new 3 Performance, hits them almost instantly. It's really crazy, especially after a charging session, the car can't cool itself down. The motors get hot, the battery gets hot. It really doesn't like high speed driving. And is this a problem anywhere other than Germany? No, I would say, unless you're going to track days, because it's called the Model 3 Performance. If you're going to drive it in a performance setting, okay, maybe not so good at this point for sustained lapping. I don't think the car could do a typical 20-minute track session set up the way it currently is with motor temperatures and battery. Now, the U.S. cars, same motors, but different battery. And the motors will actually be stressed harder in the U.S. cars because we make more power. So what does that mean for our cars on track? I don't know. I need to get one out for a track day as soon as possible and compare it with the outgoing Model 3 Performance. Thankfully, I have both cars. I have a very recent Model 3 Performance that, you know, is the previous generation, and we have the new generation as well, all owned by friends of mine. So this is a video we absolutely will be making because the thing that blows my mind, let alone whether or not you will actually run into thermal limits or you won't run into limits or this affects you or doesn't affect you. What matters to me is that the vehicles are engineered to do a task. You know, we always say, okay, people buy Range Rovers because of their capabilities, not that they're actually going to use them, but it's nice to know you could drive to the top of the mountain if you were going to. And in this case, when you buy a Model 3 Performance, it's nice to know you could go top speed on the Autobahn if you live in another European country and are going to travel through Germany, or you live in the US and are going to go maybe for the one or two track days a year, which you really should do. You buy a performance car, use it safely and go to the track. You know, the thing is, Tesla was the leader in electric vehicle thermal management and the electric vehicle charging for years and years. And now what's crazy is the Koreans are surpassing them with Ioniq 5N. The Germans are surpassing them with Porsche Taycan. Look, I understand the price of Taycan is so much more than a Model 3 Performance. However, Tesla wins on software, except when it comes to performance software. The cars have the same components. We have AC chillers, we have cooling loops, and we have temperature monitoring. With Porsche, they let you go max cooling, almost freeze the battery. Porsche lets you actually get the battery so cold before a track day, it cold gates, it power limits. It almost won't charge. It's almost frozen. And that gives you the longest thermal longevity on track. It wouldn't cost Tesla anything to do that. This is not a cost per vehicle thing. There's no real user way to control the temperature on the Model 3. And so, yeah, there's some things you can fix through software, and some of it is just a hardware issue. And unfortunately, at least that Eurospec Model 3 LG car, it's just not it. And it really needs to be. That car needs to be great. And it's just not, from a longevity standpoint. Braking and powertrain both need major updates. Watch Misha's video on the Nürburgring. Watch our video on the Autobahn. Car needs big improvements.
Well, Alhum Zid says, I dodged a bullet, was going to update my M3P. So I guess at least wait until, Kyle, you make a video and compare it to what we had before and what we have now. Jeff just took delivery. Jeff Keenan just tells us he just took delivery of a 2024 Model 3 Performance, but he's loving the extra power over the 22. So there's that as well.
Yeah, for most people, if you just floor it on the street, the occasional mountain run, these are not problems. But when you look at evaluating a car, it can't just, like, BMW M. Imagine if they made an M3 that could only do two laps of a track. Forget that, you know, 90% of M3s probably never see a track. It's still, cars need to be engineered for what they're advertised to do. And they really should be good at doing what they're intended to be used for. And this clearly just shows that performance and sustained performance was not part of the development targets, the attributes that Tesla wanted for the Model 3. And I think it's crazy to me that they put a performance badge on it. They put a plaid badge on a car with no brakes. They need a performance division. They need, you know, a Nürburgring office. They need a Laguna Seca office, whatever they want to use. But they need to develop the cars for performance driving if they're going to advertise them as performance trims. And performance driving doesn't just mean straight line acceleration. It means sustained high speed driving.
Right. And Max Patton is in the audience. He says they need an AMG Polestar M Manage style motorsport division. Echoing your thoughts. Yeah. I was kind of surprised, really, you know, because I was pretty psyched about the Model 3 Performance and Refresh, because it's such a nice, much nicer car. Like someone was saying, Misha, you know, was very complimentary of its improved, like, handling, basically.
Yeah, car's great. Car is really good as an overall package. It's awesome. And I still would buy one. I would still recommend people to buy one if you're not going to be driving them incredibly hard. But the crazy thing is, when you get Model 3 Performance, that is not going to be your track car, or at least sustained track car. And it really should be. It should be the one car to do it all.
Right. So they need to add a motorsports division, basically. And just really quickly, maybe a battery development division as well, because just some rumors really quickly, they may be dropping to 46 4650 cell,
4680,
that 4680, right,
electric. Headline that I read this week was that they've got till the end of the year to get it right, and then I think Teslarati had a headline saying that they'll have it right within the next couple of months, that the current tech is with the new guy who's in charge of Tesla batteries and energy is doing really well. So, you know, you choose your poison on that. But two very conflicting stories came out this week saying it's ready and it's good to go. And the dry coating method. Thank you, Tom. Yeah. Is now sorted. And then the electric headline said that Elon's kind of given them a timeline of, if it's not done by the end of the year, we're bidding it off. Cheaper to buy it from a supplier.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Anyway, guys, I'm going to be punching out.
All right.
I've got a date with a few pineapple coconut mojitos.
Tom, have you got the drinks package on that cruise, or is it not one of those? Is it you get it all already?
Are you really asking if I have a drink package? I mean,
I'm just checking. You know, you might have gone for the soft drinks package. I'm not, you know.
They made it really easy. It was bundled with the unlimited internet. So it was like, how do you not?
I need the internet. You can't live without the internet.
The two things that I need on this trip is unlimited internet and unlimited drinks. They're the only two things I care about. Beautiful. I haven't even been eating, for crying out loud.
Beautiful.
I'm meeting some friends in a little bit. So sweet. I'm going to be taking off. I'll leave you guys with a couple minutes of a view of the ocean, though. And then I'll just turn it off. So you don't have to shut my screen off just yet.
Okay, let's have a look at that. We just booked to take the kiddos to the fjords. So we're going to do Norway on a cruise. And so you can destroy me in the comments about taking a cruise line and heavy diesel oil and stuff like that. I'll take it. It's fine. But yeah, we've got We got our two kiddos. They'll be 3 and 7 when we sail. And what a great way to see Norway, because they're not going to sit in the car for me for whatever the 8 or 12 hours it is to, you know, firstly get either the boat across or the train under the North Sea to get to the continent. And they're not going to do that. So we're going to take a cruise and take the kiddos to see Norway. It's a great way. It's an expensive country to visit anyway, so you can always get on the ship at the end of the day and your food is there. So we can't wait. We're looking forward to it. Yeah, I know the environmental stuff around it. I get it. Totally understand it. It is what it is. Sorry about that. But yeah, I can't wait to go. And look at that. Man, that's not bad. It's not a bad view from Tom.
Lovely Mediterranean ocean. And we have blue here in this other one of our other Hollywood squares.
Yeah.
Yep. He left now.
Oh, okay. Man. Hey, Blue. All right. So, Kyle, for me, your video review of the BYD Seal was one that I really wanted to watch when I saw it coming out. So this is a car that we don't get in the U.S., but it is for sale in Europe and Mexico. It's not so, and it's not outside the realm of possibility that it could come to the U.S. with, you know, in the next 5 years or something, if it's still a model in 5 years. So this is the closest thing they have to the Tesla Model 3. It's 3.2 inches longer, which I understand allows it to have more passenger room in the rear. But so overall, what were your impressions? People can watch the video, of course, for a deep dive, all the details, but just like briefly.
Yep, car's nice. Still needs some refinement. What's funny is I was like, okay, I started the video saying, like, everyone tells me this is better than a Model 3. Let's go find out if it's better than a Model 3. And in many ways, it is. Fit and finish on the car was great. This is just a customer, you know, dropped off at a dealership. Let me come and experience these cars. Wasn't like a prepped press car. The interior was really nice in terms of materials and room. The styling, sure, looks fine. I don't think it looks particularly great, but it looks okay. And, the driving, that's the part that needed some more refinement. So I basically summed all this up in the video, which is, okay, the Chinese are building pretty cool cars. The LFP tech in this is awesome. Like, that seems great. Powertrain is stout. It actually handles not terribly. It's pretty good. It's much more geared for comfort and highway cruising. And then I was like, yeah, but I still don't see how you would really choose one over a Model 3, especially without route planning and, no preconditioning, and the software needs some improvements and driver assistance improvements coming. So it's like, okay, they kind of have a nice hardware package, but they just need the final last details of throttle pedal tuning, brake pedal tuning, software. It was like, they just need someone to do final vehicle settings and calibration for it. But so I was like, okay, don't buy this over a Model 3 yet, but I could see that happening. And then everyone in the articles that wrote articles about this video were like, Kyle says it's way better than Tesla. And I'm like, did anyone watch?
That's, you know, it's like they didn't watch the video.
Yeah. So yeah, it's really good. I was really, I'm actually going to say I was my expectations were not met with it, because everyone told me that it's going to be so good. So I came in expecting, like, this is going to be the coolest freaking thing ever. And then you get these stupid charge port flaps. Like, it still is missing the last 5% of being totally dialed in, but they're on the right track. And I think they just literally need one person to go before start of production and say, okay, adjust this setting, adjust this throttle pedal, adjust this ESP calibration, adjust this bing and bong and noise, make sure it has route planning, plug and charge, and preconditioning. Like, just don't even bring it to the market without that. And then this really could have a serious fighting chance.
Wassim Rattel says the Seal refresh is coming next month. So some of that is going to be, or at least change. But I don't know about the software. Software is really, sorry?
Yeah, so those are like hardware improvements, maybe higher voltage, things like that. It's already weird. It's like 550 volts nominal, like goes up to 600. It's like such a weird operating voltage range. But it makes sense for GBT restrictions in China, because they also have struggle with really high voltage over there. But this is being solved at the moment, so that's all good. And the problem wasn't really with the hardware, I thought. It was with the software calibration. So there's still so much more they can do with the existing car without even a refresh that should be uploaded and dialed in. Talking to the dealership, they told me they haven't sold one to a completely satisfied customer yet. Every customer comes back with a little annoyance or issue or something.
Right. Well, I'd be annoyed by the English, right? You know, some of the messaging on the screens and things, like, why can't you hire a native English speaker to just kind of write that stuff out for you? Because it's not a great experience, right? It's just like a constant reminder that you're, I don't know.
Yeah, it's definitely like, okay, this was engineered somewhere else. And right. Like I said, it just requires one person who's knowledgeable about a total vehicle integration to just dial it in. And then it would be so much better. But they're close. That's the thing. They're really close. So, yeah, that could be my job in the future one day. Sure. That would be a fun right. job.
Max is just saying, it sounds like you have a new job. For those not watching the live stream. Yeah, so... But overall, like, yeah, just a few little bit of software tweaks and this and that, and Bob's your uncle, and we have a, you know, a legit competitor, right?
Yeah, so much better than a lot of the American efforts, and mm-hmm. so much better than even a lot of the domestic European efforts as well. Mm-hmm. But like I said, it's the small details that are hard to get right.
Right.
So that one, thank you. Oh, sorry, I'm being attacked.
Hey, Walter. So Walter is Kyle's Newfoundland dog, and he's so huge now. My God.
Yeah, he's getting to be pretty big. Walter, you can say hey to everyone. Woohoo! Yeah, so he's a cool dog.
I love that he wears a bib. He drools so much.
He needs a bib, for sure. He
needs a bib.
Yeah.
Oh, he's such a sweetheart, though. All right. So is it, Martin, do you have any BYD questions or thoughts? Or
I would echo what Kyle says about the Chinese cars, not including the brands who you don't think are Chinese. So Volvo, Polestar, anything that is connected to kind of the Western car markets, the VWs, even if they're made in China, because MG? They've got... Yeah, no, not MG. MG do that really badly as well. I think there's bits of MG that feel either like the bongs, the bings and the bongs, not very like a domestic car maker would do. Is it a huge problem? No, if you know what you're getting into. But there's something about those cars. As Kyle said, it's the last 5% or maybe even the last 1%. I think the engineering is really interesting and they've spent money and it's all quite good. But there is just that last little bit. It's that user experience of when you get in the car, you look at the screens, you look at the way the icons are designed, or you use the app, or as you say, Dom, just the language, the turn of phrase. Mm-hmm. It's that last 1% where... I'm curious to know why it's going wrong, because they are getting a lot right. They've hired a lot of Western people from kind of Western car makers to either bring in and have knowledge share or learn from, as well as sort of bring the best of both worlds. There's no doubt that the Chinese car makers have an idea and the Western car makers have an idea. And what the Western car makers might do is, well, stick it on a roadmap for 3 or 4 years' time. The Chinese car makers go, well, let's bring it now. And they can just bring it out. And so there's no doubt they can bring stuff to market quicker. And they can show a different path of making a car and a vehicle, but it depends the price point you're buying, and some of the more expensive cars, yeah, I think you just need to get in it and think this has been completely sorted out. So that I think that's probably their challenge. Is
like Martin is you know how everyone's saying, okay, China speed, really quick development times. This is what we get in return, which is it takes probably a year of just testing, driving all over the world in different conditions and simulating different environments, that they're just skipping that whole last year of final calibration. And then they're like, okay, I guess we'll update it with software, but the seal's been out long enough where this should have been updated by now. So, and also EX30, similar problems.
It's awful.
Yeah.
Right.
They're giving people refunds.
Yeah, so I had the newest software on EX30. I'll have a full review coming in a couple weeks. Something happened with the car that I'm giving Volvo time to tell me what happened to it. But all I can say is my experience with EX30 was I came in, amazing design, amazing styling, and then little things. Like, it doesn't even tell you how fast it's charging. And then ADAS issues and weird powertrain stuff and front clutch disconnect reconnect takes like 2 seconds to get connected. And so you have to put it in performance all-wheel drive. And I was so shocked because I thought this would be the software update to solve it. And again, I'm holding my video until Volvo tells me what happened with the car while I had it. But I'll of course do a full video on that situation. It's only fair to them to give them a chance to respond. But my EX30 experience was like, wow, this needs another year or two of development before it goes on sale, because they got it so right from a visual perspective.
Yeah. Yeah, and right. they absolutely nailed the you get in it and you're like, this is cool, this is funky, like the choice of materials, yeah, it is just that one screen, but that's okay. It's a small vehicle as well, so they've got all of that right. It feels like a bigger vehicle than it really is. They look great when you see them on the outside. And for a long time Volvo have been nailing styling with the XC40, yeah. And in fact, you know, all the way up to the
always XC90. Really.
It just looks fantastic. I see some old XC90s flying around. They still look great as well. But it's utterly shocking that the software is this much of a failure. And that's at that price point. So that's why they can't even dream of bringing the EX90 to market until it's more than sorted. Because that's a whole different price point and a whole different set of expectations. And Volvo EX90 buyers are not, you know, Tesla Model X buyers back in the day where the Falcon Wing doors would go wrong and they, you know, either, you know, rub the paint off or just not close, you know, whatever. And they're fine, like, hey, it's fine, you know, fine, because I'm enjoying this experience of being a trailblazer. We're past all of that with big expensive vehicles and SUVs like that. They need to bring it and it needs to be sorted immediately. And I don't think they, by the my last experience with an EX30, and I haven't used the software Kyle used, anyway.
I would say if Volvo is on the trajectory of what I experienced with EX30, there's no future for the brand. And that's, I'm a awful. Volvo enthusiast. Wow. Really awful. Big Volvo enthusiast. So
yeah,
they have a lot of work to do. Holy smokes.
Hey, they've
and
got the money.
They're doing so well, too.
Their financials came out this week for Q2, and it's like, I think, the best ever. And they had fantastic results. So
well, the existing cars are all great. So they, like, XC90 came out in 2016, still looks modern, still looks fresh, still a nice car. Their wagons are better than anything.
Yes.
Yeah, the XC40 and C40, okay. Maybe not technically impressive, but just enough of good stuff where people aren't really complaining about them. They're fast enough. They drive great. Good enough software to be livable. Like, they really got that stuff dialed in. But really, at the end of the day, this whole new Geely platform stuff that will underpin EX90 and EX30, and it's so much I love about the car, but there's so much that they still need to dial in before it comes here.
Really underlines how important software has become. You know, it's really an essential to get that, you know, it takes, I don't know, I feel like as much effort needs to be put in software as any other thing about the car.
Basically. What I want to know is, what does it mean for Polestar 3 and Polestar 4?
Right.
And yeah.
Will they even get Polestar 4 in the US?
That'll be interesting to see the speed of the rollout, because all the initial videos have been positive. But again, they're all the first drive videos and first look videos, and none of the outlets, the ones that I watched, I haven't driven either of those, they're not typically critical car review channels. It's more like, hey, it's the first drive of this, or it's, you know, they're EV channels and stuff.
We did not get invited to the first drive of Polestar 3 or 4, and they canceled our US Polestar 3 drive.
Yeah, well, you're gonna review it in a different way, because you do car reviews, not first drive.
But we should still go to those things to get the first videos. I mean, I do.
I know. Yeah.
Yeah.
But you are going to review the car rather than be like, hey, look, the headlight looks nice. And that was kind of the limit of that. So we'll wait and see what happens with those ones. But
Max seems pretty relaxed about it. He says 3 and 4 are on completely different OSs. Very weird. 3 is the one that's compromised because it shares tick with Volvo.
So what's going to happen with Polestar 2 with this 100% import tax?
Well, Polestar 3 and 4 are on different platforms completely, aren't they?
Well, Polestar 3 will be built in South Carolina.
Right, okay.
So Polestar 4 will be built in China, I thought.
Okay.
Yeah, well, that's not coming here then.
Yeah, if it's 100%.
Polestar 2? Polestar 2s are built in China. They all have L VINs.
Right.
Yeah.
No one has told me what's going to happen with Polestar 2. Did they just do a mass import and then we're done? No more Polestar 2s ever, which means Polestar has no new cars coming in?
Maybe.
Man, okay. Until they, I don't know, maybe they can build them somewhere else. Abe is saying something about Korea here, but I'm not sure. Are they building Polestars in Korea?
Maybe.
I can't. The ring is a slight bell, but
yeah. I'm not so in tune with that stuff. But all right. I can say is, okay, just something to keep an eye on. We got to figure out what's going on.
Yeah, but the tariff does really make things very difficult for them, for sure. Like Mike the Car Geek here is saying, Polestar in the U.S. is on thin ice. Yeah.
My impression just working with Polestar in the U.S. is, you know, we used to do a lot with them, and now they almost kind of don't respond to anything we say to them. And, you know, I own a Polestar. Max owns a Polestar. We have each model, and we do, like, we're like, hey, we want to do Polestar 3. The cars are here in America. Get us a car, whatever we need to do. I will fly anywhere at my own expense. I just need a car for even just for a day. And it's just like, I just keep sending request after request. Every 3 days I send a request. I'm like, hey, I'm going to be in Europe. Can I test drive this car? So then I said, you know, I booked a test drive at the Munich Polestar 3 test drive center as a customer. That was canceled. Don't know why. At the last minute. And there was another opportunity. So Korea for Polestar sounds good.
Interesting.
Yeah, I was going to say Nathan Green is just commenting. I thought I saw a Polestar was shifting. Where did it go? Was shifting assembly to Korea as a strategic move. That may be, but it sounds like they're not really to communicate that or do a lot of. You know, they won't let Kyle have a car, they're not even talking to you, right?
I mean, they kind of respond. They're like, oh, we're doing what we can to get you a car. Right. You know, like I have this one guy that's like trying to get us into one, but it just feels like, okay, if you really cared, we'd have one in the driveway right now.
Right. All right. Let's move on and get into some news real quick then. The Porsche Macan Electric, which is now being offered on sale in the U.S., has two more trims coming. One is just called the rear-wheel drive model, and the other is the 4S. So the rear-wheel drive will start at $77,295. I believe that's with destination included. It uses the same rear motor as the next higher trim, the 4, which is $3,155 more. It's obviously a bit down on power, but it's still just a second, half a second slower to 60 miles an hour, 5.4 seconds. And it has the same 136 mile an hour top speed as the 4 trim. So as you might have guessed, the 4S is the trim above the 4 and just below the turbo, which is the top announced trim so far. And yes, Porsche uses turbo as a trim level, even though it doesn't have a turbo, but that's just Porsche things. The 4S boasts 442 horsepower with a short overboost hitting 509 horsepower. This gives it a 0 to 60 of 3.9 seconds, and it has a higher top track speed, at least of 149 miles an hour. The source of that power is interesting, though, because it uses the same motor in the front as the 4, but on the rear axle, it's got a new motor, and it powers everything with a 600 amp silicon carbide pulse inverter, SIC pulse inverter.
Yeah, which this is interesting because Taycan, unless you get a turbo GT, is using silicon IGBTs, not silicon carbide. So Macan gets a more efficient inverter across the model lineup.
We talked about that a little bit last week, and because the Taycan is not using that because of performance differences. Was that
I think it's just cost.
You think it was just cost? I thought there was some sort of performance thing that IGBT was just a bit more reliable.
Oh yeah, I mean when you're talking racing applications and abusive applications, IGBT is a bit hardier, but in a series production car, even for racetrack use, silicon carbide's fine. And that's shown because the Turbo GT uses silicon carbide.
Okay. So both the new trims get air suspension, including Porsche Active Suspension Management, electronic damping control as standard, and optional Porsche torque vectoring plus an optional rear steer. The air suspension on the 4S, though, is adaptive. So that's a nice little extra plus there.
Isn't it as well on the 4? Or sorry, isn't it as well on the rear drive? I thought all the suspensions were the same.
Yep, I think they are.
Really? I thought there was I thought it was making a little differentiation there when I was reading through it. Abe is in the comments. He might know.
Abe's our guy. But I'm pretty sure they come with sunroof. I mean, like, our U.S. cars come pretty highly spec'd for Macan, which is unusual for Porsche. but they come pretty spec the same.
Oh, Max is asking, am I alone and thinking it's a little fugly? Yes. Nope. Yes, Max. You and Kyle are alone.
I think the back of it's not good. I said that when I reviewed it for the first time too. I was just like, not into it. The front of it, I love.
There's the back of it.
Right. Yeah. I think it's a great little package, though. I can't wait to.
Well, that's the spec to have. That's off-road design pack with roof rails, with the off-road wheels. That looks really cool. And I think that's in oak green Neo. That's a nice color.
Right. And that's the 4S. Yeah, there is a little section there on off-road bits I didn't quite get to in my prep.
Yeah, but I mean, it's I covered it when I reviewed the Macan at the tech day. I actually already, been in the 4S. So we all knew this was coming because I made a video off-road with one and it was in a Macan 4S that was not announced yet. So
you have a video coming? Is that what you're saying?
No, the video's already went up like 6 months ago.
Oh, okay.
And I already mentioned the rear drive is coming and we know there's a 4S trim because I was in one. So nothing is new here. Right. I mean, it's new available, but it's not new information.
I hear you. Hey, Martin. So with the advent of the more affordable Macan, have you made plans to trade in your MG4?
MGZS that I own. I gave that to Mum ages ago because my stepdad were sharing a car in their retirement, and she's like, "But I want to go to the flower show." I'm like, "Oh, I've got a spare car. You can have this. I need to get it back at some point." So this is cool for my UK viewers. So this starts at $69,800. It's a lot of money for 402 horsepower, and then it goes up to $95,000 for the Macan Turbo 630 horsepower. That is all loveliness. In the US starts at 77,295, as you say, whether that's with or without destination, but fantastic, just absolutely love this. Love the fact that it's going to add to the segment that the Jaguar I-Pace is sadly departing at the end of the year, that the Polestar 4 will fit into, but I love my Polestar, but I think there's some big question marks around, well, certainly those two new cars coming at the same time, confusion around what is a Polestar 3 and a Polestar 4 arriving very close together, and just lots of kind of question marks around Polestar at the minute generally as well, which is interesting, but I'm a huge fan, and that's where I chose to put my money. Like it, rear wheel drive, saving 110 kilograms or 243 pounds, and for anyone that doesn't need or want all-wheel drive, then absolutely drive the rear wheel, save some weight, save some money. Still over 300 miles on WLTP, which almost 500 kilometers. So yeah, brilliant. Porsche want to be 80% EV by 2030, and the Macan is the way they're gonna make a big bite into that. The Taycan, as brilliant as it is, you wouldn't think is going to sell as well as what the Macan will eventually do. So hugely important. The Audi Q6 e-tron and everything that's going to be on PP premium platform electric is important to them. But this is a really important vehicle to Porsche. Anything that allows people to get into this for a little bit less money is perfect.
Right. Kyle, Macan sales are just starting up here now in the US, the electric ones.
Nope, what? not until the earliest date. I think it's September 20 right now.
Right.
And that's if everything goes well.
Okay. I'm seeing them advertise it everywhere,
They're not I haven't even seen one in the US yet. That's not like a test prototype car.
Okay. I mean, I was on cars.com. I saw and went to Porsche, actually, the site, and they show them for sale on different places around the country. But I guess these aren't maybe delivered to the stores yet.
Are you sure you're looking at Macan Electric and not Macan?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Electric. Anyway,
as far as my understanding is start sale won't be till middle to end of September.
Okay, so is this cadence of trim levels normal? Because I saw some complaints from customers in a Facebook group because some had ordered like a 4 because they thought the 4S was too far off and now they can't change their orders. So there's like some disgruntlement. Is this cadence of trim introduction like kind of normal for Porsche?
absolutely. I mean,
yep. Okay.
This is every single model for the last who knows how many years. Nothing is a surprise. We already know there's going to be a GTS trim at some point. There will probably be something above the turbo at some point. Yep. It is just the same formula over and over and over.
Yeah.
Okay.
Which I feel if you don't know how Porsche do that, I do feel for you as a buyer. If you're thinking, oh, I like that car. But if you know a little bit about what they call their vehicles and when they eventually fill in the gaps in their lineup, then it's always going to come.
Right. All right. So let's move on to the Macan. Sadly, I love that thing, man. I think it looks so good. I was going through the press photos last night and it's like,
It's a cool car. I mean, it's not cheap, right? It's a Porsche. And especially for Macan in general has always been less expensive. This is, you're paying a premium price.
Yeah.
And it's built on PPE, which is a shared Q6 platform, sister cars here. But it's cool. And there's something special about it. And the charging performance and the route planner integration and the driving and the look. I mean, it all kind of works really well. I was very positive on it on my review. And actually, you can go for a pretty high spec turbo, but it's not crazy money. I mean, it's still crazy money, but you're not like 200 plus for a moderately spec Taycan now. You're low 100s for a nice turbo.
Okay. I was looking at the prices last night. They seemed kind of high. They were like starting for base like 100,000, but I guess that's just a few options.
No, you can even get a Macan 4 very nicely spec'd for well under 100 grand.
Right, just the ones I saw advertised, like the, you know, from dealers that are already out there on
they've added
on
that,
the sites. So. Yeah, they're
that'll change.
Some juicy pricing going on,
but they've got to be lucky. They've got to be confident in selling them because. The sad thing for anyone who owns a Taycan, and the good thing for anybody who wants to buy one, is they've been hit, along with Mercedes EQSs and other cars like that, have been hit by the highest depreciation. Like some of them losing 45% in their first year. And so the era of dealers speculatively adding 20 grand on and seeing who's going to buy one, I think it's going to be very short-lived with a Macan.
Yeah, I don't think they'll do it. I think Macans are, at least from what I can tell, it's all at sticker right now for an order. Not even a question asked. Probably get a discount on inventory when they come in.
Good.
And they need a good lease deal. Most people in this category, in this market, this type of buyer, they're leasing. They want it for 3 years. Yep. And the thing with the Macan is if you lease it, you get the $7,500 tax credit, which you can't get if you buy it. So you may as well just lease it and buy it out. Worst case.
Yeah. Good shout.
Right. It's going to be interesting to see how the depreciation works with the Macan because it's a new platform. So I think a lot of the problem is technology is just getting better. So, you know, older vehicles losing value a lot quicker, plus all the incentives and all those kinds of things as well and dealer add-ons. And it all adds up to huge depreciation for some people, which sucks. But all right, let's move on. So this really quickly about the Hyundai Ioniq 5. It just went on sale in the US in 2022, but it actually went on sale in Korea like a year earlier. So it's already ripe for updating. It gets a few changes the styling and basically in the front and rear bumper area. On the outside, it's where you're going to be able to tell the differences. And many will be happy to learn it will have a rear wiper as well. The big changes in the battery. So we've talked about a lot of these changes with the Hyundai Ioniq 5N already, as Kyle was reminding me before this show. Most of the things that the 5N gets, we're now getting here as well. So the battery size is increased from 77.4 kilowatt hours to 84. So the max range in the rear-wheel drive version increases, of course, then to 301 miles WLTP, up from 285. So that's a nice little boost. And despite getting a slightly larger battery, the 10 to 80% charging time is still said to be 18 minutes. So that'll be cool to check that out, test that. The 2025 Ioniq 5 was going to be produced at the Mega Plant outside of Savannah, Georgia later this year. So that's a pretty exciting aspect of all of this. Inside, the steering wheel goes from two spoke to three spoke. But more importantly, I think the really big deal about this thing is that it gets the new software. And this is something that I missed during the Hyundai Ioniq 5N kind of rollout. I didn't really realize Now that I spend a lot of time in the EV9, I'm kind of more in my mind like the software on these EGMP cars. But this is the, what do you call it? The Connected Car Navigation Cockpit is what they're calling CCNC. It's kind of the name of their next generation infotainment system. And I believe it gets a more powerful chipset as well, which is needed. If my experience with the Kia EV9 has it, you know, I just found it the screen reactiveness a bit underwhelming, like not acceptable for like a brand new car in today's market. It really needed that new chipset. So that's happening in the IONIQ 5 as well. OTA over the air updates have been expanded to the controllers, and they say lane following assist too. So your ADAS systems are going to be significantly enhanced. It's got a new hands-on detection for the steering wheel as well. The ride's improved. It's got the frequency dampening shocks, frequency response dampening. Cabin noise is cut down by more soundproofing, better glass in the doors and windshield. The rear motor has got better sound deadening. So that's a good number of changes. And I understand the price is going to stay the same. Kyle, do you think this is going to be enough to move the needle in sales? Because they've got a lot more production capacity. I feel they really need to drastically increase those. So year to date, U.S. sales have been about just under 19,000. And I feel I need to hit like 50,000 with this thing.
Not possible.
Oh, really? Man.
What about this moves the needle that much farther than the existing car that we're going to see a massively different response in consumer purchasing behavior?
Well, maybe pricing, because it's now eligible for the 7,500, but they've already been taking that off the prices,
because,
right?
Because you could just get a used one for like no money. So leasing is really the only way to move this car. And they already have on the existing cars an incredible lease deal. I mean, at least here at the local dealer, they're doing like $250 a month, $290 a month, something like that on a lease. This is a $50,000-something car that's leasing for pennies. And we're already, I don't know. From my perspective, I don't know. I don't see how they have fully integrated the Hyundai Kia Genesis EV holistic usage case into the consumer experience. So everything from the app to charging to route planning to daily usability, there's just it's the car's not a finished package, and that's it's a really nice hardware package. Drives right. Great, amazing charging, looks really good, but like just the whole thing that like preconditioning came out so late, and they still struggle with thermal management in certain situations, especially in cold weather. Maybe some of these things will be improved, but has a rear wiper. That's great. So the car is really getting dialed in, but no one's going to walk into a dealer and finance this thing or pay cash for it when it's just going to lose, you know, a Model 3 out the trunk when you drive it away from the dealer in terms of value.
I mean, they got them priced pretty low though. I mean, like the MRSP is one thing, but this, like, look at this here. I'll pull this up real quick. These prices. So this is on cars.com. These are all new cars, $37,000. And this is, you know, with it, whatever discounts already added to them.
So you've got an MSRP of 50 grand on most of these, and they're right. Advertising them at 37,820. But what, how much of that is, all of that, don't know, but that's crazy.
Right. So I would think this would be super competitive with Model Y, which outsells it by, I don't know, a factor of five at least, I would imagine.
Well, a big barrier is you have to deal with a Hyundai dealer to buy the car, which normally sucks.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. I've been shopping IONIQ 5Ns myself, and just dealing with Hyundai dealers on that process, not good.
Yeah.
Right.
If I was a normal person, I would have just went and bought a Model Y by now.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. That's true.
The Y is really just the price. It's so good for what you get, and the range and everything is just sorted with it.
And the resale wise, I mean, you're going to lose some money, but nothing like you would lose on one of these. So like,
I think one of the things they could do to invigorate Kias and Hyundais is when the new model year comes out, be the first ones with native J3400. If they did that, I think get everybody talking, bundle with them with an adapter so that you can use any charger anywhere. And I think that would show them as being reactive, forward-thinking, able to re-engineer the vehicle. I don't think it's going to happen, but I think model year or refresh Ioniq 5, new Kia EV6, I think the smartest thing they could do would be like, right, the new ones, we're the first ones out with a native port, and you go fill your boots and use the supercharging network.
Yeah, but Martin, you're forgetting they charge like crap on superchargers. Well,
that's true. That's true.
80 kilowatts on 5N. That's all.
Is that getting improved? Oh, the 5N, really?
Yeah, 80 kilowatts on 5N.
Yeah.
And our EV9's 80 kilowatts. Some of them will do like 100. The G80 or the Genesis sedan one does like 120 kilowatts. But they all have like a different boosting capability, which makes no sense to me. But
yeah.
That's bizarre on the same platform. So we should get going. We really need to get going. But I wanted just to mention real quick, though, Mercedes-Benz High Power Charging and Starbucks team up to launch an elevated EV charging experience across America. So that's 100 stores, retail Starbucks across America, getting Mercedes chargers, DC fast chargers, and these are Alpitronic units, I think, too.
Yep, exactly.
So we're talking probably some good reliable charging, or hopefully, 400 kilowatts. Sorry.
Yeah, hopefully reliable.
Such a smart thing to do. Such a perfect place to put it. Like that. This is the whole conversation that I think the next half of this decade is going to be about. It's where do we put what kind of chargers? And 400 kilowatt DC fast charging, put it at Starbucks. Because by the time, if you're not doing drive-through, by the time you've ordered or queued, ordered, paid, maybe use the restroom, whatever, that's like, it time adds up. Do you know what I mean? Like that is... There's a Starbucks near me that's got some DC fast charging in, and it's so convenient because it's the kind of perfect stop time. Like 20 minutes is great. And then we can put AC charging, 100,000 AC plugs in places where your car sits for several hours. I just thought this is the kind of perfect place. Like, let's get the right chargers in the right place. And I think unless you're doing the drive through, then someone like a Starbucks or any kind of these places where you have this short dwell time is so important. This is going to be the big conversation we have going forward.
So I was thinking this would be great for those people who go to Starbucks like every day or almost every day. You could plug in like 3 times a week,
you know,
for like 10 minutes or 5 or 10 minutes and still have, you have all the, that's all the charging you need to do. Like if you're relatively low on charge and you plug into a 400 kilowatt, you're going to get a bunch of kilowatt hours really quickly. So that, you know, 5-10 minutes, a few times a week, you're all set. You could live in an apartment and have a car and just go to Starbucks. I guess the ambition of this first phase, they say, of the collaboration will be to add DC fast chargers at Starbucks locations along the 1,400-mile Interstate 5 corridor. So that's the corridor that goes up from the Mexican border to the Canadian border, basically, on the West Coast through California, Oregon, and Washington, and through major cities like San Diego, Los Angeles, Sacramento, Portland, Seattle. So that is all coming, and that sounds like a great road trip sometime. Charging at Starbucks.
So it's not the first Starbucks partnership. They did a Volvo thing.
Right.
Yes. And they did the Denver to Seattle Starbucks network.
Right.
Which
Did we do that yet?
No, I got to do a road trip. I want to do that.
There was an automaker involved with that one too, right?
Yeah, Volvo.
A Volvo, right. So yeah, we want to drive a Volvo from the length of that corridor.
Yeah, so maybe I'll go rent a C40 or something from Hertz and go drive it up.
So yeah, we don't get enough C40 content.
Because no one cares.
Yeah, because no one sees it. It's like, you know, self-fulfilling prophecies and all that.
I already did everything we need to do with that car. Yeah, I think it's been updated this year, but I haven't driven it recently. You know, like EX30, that platform, that's the future. That's what I want to focus on, not really what's today. And
Sounds like Rovo's got some homework to do before we get the EX30 here, though. So
yeah, not a bad thing it's delayed for the U.S., I'll tell you that much.
They're doing so well. You know, you don't really want to ruin the brand just as it's really getting its feet underneath of it.
But back to Mercedes for a second. I really do want to commend Mercedes on truly going hardcore into this charging network. Like they are not messing around. You know, I talk to those guys quite often and they're like, we are just doing everything possible, pushing. One of our viewers had an issue at one of their stations where there was something where a plug got fused to their car. Like it was a latch issue. And they literally like dispatched everyone on a Sunday to the middle of South Carolina to try and fix this thing. So they're taking it really seriously. And they're building a lot of stations. Bucky's, right now they've been using ChargePoint hardware. They're going to use Alpi going forwards. And it's all good to me. I'm really that's the station. I filmed a full tour of that one. I was just at the Mercedes hub in Mannheim, Germany. That was cool as well. So, yeah, they're and it's open to the public. They're going hardcore.
Yeah, it's going to be cool. Actually, I should go up to the little end and check that out. We're going to play an open mic up there in the August sometime. There's a famous little club there that has a famous competitive open mic. So we're going to hit that. So maybe at the same time, I should go check out the Mercedes-Benz charging hub there. Because, yeah, you did a whole video on it. I've seen it, but I kind of like to see it in person.
Oh, yeah. You got to go in person. It's at their HQ. It's kind of cool. So you'll see like prototypes. They actually use an EQC security vehicle. It's the only EQC that was brought into the US, I guess.
Nice. Okay. Because
the car was originally planned to come to our market. So this was one of the early ones and it's staying here. It's like legal to be here. And it's like a legal EQC and it's the MBHQ security vehicle.
Cool.
Wow. Sweet. So yeah, okay. I'm going to write that down on my calendar then because I need to be there on like a Monday night. And so what am I going to do all Monday during the day? I guess make a video about the Mercedes-Benz EQC. It sounds like a good plan.
Yeah, I don't know if they'll let you film it. They didn't.
Yeah, I don't know if they'll let me in there either.
Film it, but yeah, worth a try if you can.
There's some great EQC deals at the minute. Not that I've been looking. EQE now starts used over here at $40,000. EQS starts at $50,000. For used ones, not that I've been looking, obviously.
Those are nice, man. Those are.
No, I'm keeping the Polestar for a year. I told my wife, look, we're going to keep this one for a year. So
yeah,
I'm not changing it. I'm 6 months out. I'm just starting to look. But you guess some EQC. If you don't need the sort of latest, greatest, high efficiency, long range, that's such a nice vehicle as well.
Yeah,
like it's not going to win any awards in sort of technical wise in terms of the drivetrain and stuff. But my gosh, that's gorgeous.
We had a battery bargains episode this week where the first case was looking for a performance vehicle to replace his Taycan. He had like 67,000 miles on his Taycan, and he was starting to get a few issues of some kind, so he wanted to swap it out. And I had thought about the EQE AMG, but I didn't mention it on the show. But then I looked it up, I think yesterday, and I was like, oh, actually, this might be pretty decent too. Have you driven the EQE AMG?
Yeah.
Okay. How do you feel? It's like a proper sports credentials at all? No, falls down.
It's very good in a straight line, and like the EQE SUV AMG or the I don't know in what order all of those go, but that one was like pretty drifty. But it's not like a performance car. But I actually really enjoyed driving that around. You know, I am not against the Mercedes EV thing. Once you're inside of them and you're just cruising and you're doing what that car was intended to do, okay, this is really nice.
It's really nice.
Yeah, they do a great job on the cars. They charge a lot of money for them, but they're pretty sweet.
What about Lucid for this guy?
Yeah, we suggested a Lucid because he wants to move out of a sports car. He gives something a bit more of a cruiser, but still has some performance chops to it. And so Dom came up with the Electra, which I thought was interesting. I didn't even know this was in your market yet. And I thought, hey, that's a great suggestion on our battery bargain show.
It's not in the market yet.
It's being advertised as for sale. Like you can order it. I'm not sure
when does it arrive though. Again, it's Chinese, but
I don't think we may not ever get it.
Oh, that's. So this is performance-y, SUV-y, something-y. Yeah, I mean, lovely. Very nice. Lotus are getting everything right at the minute, particularly charging. But anyway.
Yeah, the Emeya looks pretty good. I haven't experienced it, but next Euro trip, I want to get an Emeya in.
Right, yeah. I was going to ask about the Emeya at some point. Just briefly, while we're on mentioning battery bargains, if you're looking for a car or an EV and you want some recommendations, drop us a line at batteriesincludedpodcast.com. Oh, you're quick with that, Martin.
Hey.
Because we need some cases to solve. We've got a new thumbnail. We're ready to go hard.
We're here on Tuesdays, normally Wednesday mornings, isn't it? Your time, Wednesday morning, your time.
We've been doing Wednesday mornings live.
I love that. We just talk about used EVs or new EV deals that are around, and it's kind of the audience chip in of stuff they found. It's such a great little show. Not as many viewers as this one, but I love it.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but I just got an email that says you're invited. This is not from like Polestar Press. This is, I think, maybe from being an owner. It says you're invited to the celebration to welcome the Polestar 4 at your local Polestar space.
And where is your local Polestar space?
Only just about an hour away in Denver. Yeah. They service my Polestar 1. It's got to go in for an oil change. It's so funny calling them. And I say, hey, yeah, I have a Polestar. And, yep, it needs an oil change. They're like, but
what?
But we don't do that. And I'm like, no, it's definitely asking for an oil change. I swear. It's a service engine, you know, oil change. They're like, it's not. And I'm like, yeah. And then you finally get transferred to the one person who's heard of a Polestar 1.
Wow. And that, right. Because did you ever find out how many are in the US? Because you are in such a rare breed.
As far as I know, it's kind of the only one in the Midwest, or at least in the Colorado, Utah area, is what our local space is saying. I'm the only owner that they service the car of.
Oh, okay.
So there's none locally.
I love that you drive right. it. I think I've talked about my friend before who has an original Tesla Roadster, lives across the park from me over there, and he drives it every day to the supermarket. And I'm like, what about door dings and stuff like that? And he's had it for years. And I'm like, I said, God, if that was my pension, if I had an original Tesla Roadster, that thing would be, I'd have an armed guard next to it. And he's like, no, cars are for driving. And so you drive your Polestar 1. I love that. It's such a cool car.
Yeah. All right, we should let everybody go. That brings us to the end of our show. If you have any questions or comments, please leave them below or get in touch with us on the social media platform of your choice. Don't forget, if you like the show, please give us a thumbs up. That helps us out a lot. Click subscribe. Tap the bell icon for notifications so you don't miss any of our midweek shows. Thank you all very much for joining us, and we'll see you again very soon. Ciao.
At Ability Chiropractic, we do things differently. We believe lasting health starts with understanding how your body truly works, not masking pain with quick fixes. Our doctors take the time to educate and empower you to take control of your wellness journey. Through gentle, customized adjustments, we help restore proper function and unlock your body's natural healing power. That's why Columbus families have trusted Ability Chiropractic since 2012. See the difference for yourself. Book an appointment today at abilitychiro.com.